Hey everyone, welcome to Dose of the Dead podcast. Today is April 30th, 2018. And this is episode 25 and a half. I know it sounds strange because I've never done this before, but I just thought it was necessary and thought it would be cool to have this audio that I got last night from the Asbury Park Music and Film Festival. At the House of Independence, they showed the documentary Long Strange Trip. And then afterwards, they had an interview with Eric Eisner and Justin Kreutzmann, who helped, in a big part, put together the movie. So this was the second time I saw this documentary. I saw it, obviously, when it first came out last year. I watched it on Netflix. I think I watched it three separate like parts. I broke the parts up into two, just because I thought it was a lot of information to all digest at once. But this time it was doors open at 1:45 and started at around 2 and it played until close to 6. So it was, they gave you a 10-minute intermission after Act 3. But besides that, it really wasn't any break. It was watching it straight through. And I like watching things second time, two times, and even more. I mean, I feel like you always pick up on as much as you can the first time, but there's no way you could pick up on anything. Everything, I mean, the first time you watch something, especially a 4-hour documentary. So watching it the second time, almost just about a year later, it was fun and interesting to pick up on different things that maybe I didn't really see the first time around. So it was just a nice some more knowledge. They had a lot of like I remembered a lot of I feel like that documentary was more based on their beginnings and stuff into 70 to 72 to the breakup. And then after that, then it started really flowing and they were just going through the years pretty much quickly. 77 was mentioned, and then, you know, the late 70s. And then I feel like they kind of just went right into In the Dark. And then after that, so I mean, for a 6-hour documentary, I do believe they left out a lot of parts, but you know, it's listening to the interview, it took them close to 11 years to make this, so I'm not going to give any hate on that documentary. I don't know really anyone, or has there been any other documentary about the Grateful Dead that's been put together that well. So overall, yes, I love the documentary. I wanted to post this Q&A with those two. They were interviewed by, I can't remember his name, but he's from the Asbury Park Press. And then there was a few questions asked from the audience. But I wanted to post it because it was cool to hear what they had to say about the movie. But also, there were other questions too. Like, Justin had some cool insight on stories with Jerry back when he was like 7 years old, flying in planes or waiting in airports with him, talking about movies and stuff. And come to find out, Jerry's a comic book thief. He stole borrowed Justin's comic book, some of his comic books, when he was younger. And as he put it, they were never returned, so you can't really call that borrowing. But those are some cool things I think you guys are going to find interesting. And then they also gave a timetable for an actual physical copy of Long Strange Trip to be released. So I won't spoil for that for you guys. I'll let you listen to the Q&As and see how they answer those. But like I said, they also talk about 72, which I thought was very interesting. And it's cool to have that in this discussion. Also, because this is a kind of a breakup in between the two or three episodes of my coverage of Europe 72. That's why I didn't want to call it episode 26, because 26 will be the third and final part of Europe 72, the final 8 shows, and that will be later on in May. But I felt the need to give you a little pop-up short episode. So this is all it's going to be. It's the Q&A, like I said. I'm just going to let that play out, and then that'll be it. So just like to share this with you guys. Like I said, I recorded it off my phone, so I hope the quality of the audio is decent. It's the best I could do. I wasn't there with a tape deck or anything to get the best quality audio, even though probably iPhones are better, or if not as close as having some of the taping devices. So, like I said, here is the interview with Justin Kreutzmann and Eric Eisner of the Long Strange Trip documentary at April 29th, 2018, the House of Independence at the Asbury Park Music and Film Festival. Enjoy.
Justin Kreutzmann and Eric Eisner.
After a film that long, I don't blame anybody for running as fast as you can before the panel. Totally understand.
That's why we're talking over the ending credits now.
Yeah, these guys didn't do anything. They're not
worth it. So who here has had a chance to see Long Strange Trip before, or is this your first time? Anyone seen it before? All right, this is my third time seeing it, so I'm sure you guys have seen it more than me.
Yes.
I actually sat and watched the last hour and a half. And it's really good.
It is. It's really good.
It's really good.
The ending just bums me out every time. Yeah, I keep expecting something different every time.
I have a different opinion. I think it bums you out because that's the reality of the story, but then it brings you up at the end, in my opinion. There is an uplifting outro, I believe. It is a heavy sixth act.
Yeah. Not many stories have a six-act structure.
Exactly, but I think at the end it should leave you feeling good.
Now, I guess, you know, to start at the ending, what made you guys decide to stop at 95? I mean, the movie has to stop at some point, but what made you guys decide, you know, 95 was the point to stop this story?
So we could do another four-hour movie and start it with, like, Dead & Company and go on from there.
Awesome. I would watch that.
And I also think Amir Bartlett, who's the director, it has to end at some point, and that kind of was the end point on his tale of this band. So at some point, you got to take that out of his hands as well.
So, I believe it was 2 years ago that you gentlemen came to town to preview this film. There was no footage to be seen at that time. This movie, as Deadheads know, has been a long time in the making. What was it that kind of prolonged the production, post-production process so much that, you know, I mean, it was obviously worth the wait, but what was it that was kind of the biggest stumbling block or time sink as far as the making of Long Strange Trip?
There were so many along the way, but I think one interesting story when I was thinking, sitting there watching it, was when the director and I first approached each other, the first person I reached out and I met was Justin. So that was an interesting thing. We knew nobody from the Grateful Dead. The director had really not reached out.
You know how much trouble they're in if I'm your best contact.
we went to San Francisco with you and Jacqueline, and that was the first connection to kind of making a reality with the band's cooperation, which is the only way it could be done.
And Justin, as someone who literally grew up in this family, in this scene, what was it like for you to be involved in this project and try to retain some air of objectivity while also very much bringing your own perspective to the work?
Well, first of all, I had to throw objectivity out the window because I'm way too close to it. So that's why Amir was given control and free rein to make the movie that he wanted to make. Because my perspective on this, as you can imagine, is much different.
I would think so.
It should be told from somebody who's got a couple steps back and was a fan. You know, I grew up in it, and I love it. I'm a fan of their music, but I never, you know, had to sell waffles to get to the next show. So it's like, you know, I can't, you know, I really respect people that went to such effort to get to these shows. So that's who should tell the Grateful Dead story, not the Grateful Dead.
And then somebody with like Amir, who was perfect, like you say, surrounded by people that are fans and people that are non-fans. So when Scorsese became involved, you had someone who was a huge music fan, a huge archival fan, huge fan about the process, but not necessarily such a Deadhead. Which I think was good to have. So you had the push and the pull of the two. But at the core, Amir being a real central Deadhead was key.
Now, there's so much material in this film that, for longtime fans of the band, is just, you know, amazing, enlightening material, whether that's that first UK tour or the early Garcia Hunter coffeehouse days. What for each of you guys was kind of like the holy grail of material? Like, you know, this is something that the world has to see that I can't believe we got our hands on.
We're both going to see the black and white footage from Europe because that I had never seen that. I feel I've probably seen a fair share of Grateful Dead footage in my life, and Yeah, that's like watching Dylan's Don't Look Back. It was awesome. That footage is killer.
For sure, that was the crown jewel. But to give Justin credit, at the end where Jerry is playing and he throws a towel over his head and he's practicing crazy fingers, Justin shot when he was how old?
That was Kaiser. This is my David Lemieux moment. That was Kaiser, December 1986.
Again, but only access that someone like from the inside could get, which ended up in the cut in a major way. And so I think that's pretty special footage too.
Now, Justin, you and I were talking a few years ago, and you said one of the things that when you were growing up on the road with the band that you and Jerry would talk about was movies. Jerry himself was a big film fan. And also a comic book fan. I remember you said he borrowed your comic book of a Superman and Muhammad Ali boxing, right?
Well, borrows implies that he gave them back. That actually never happened. So they're still on loan. Someday I'm hoping to get them back and working on Trixie and Annabelle to see if they're still around. But you know when you're first into something and you're like 7 years old and that's all you can talk about is like the latest Spielberg movie, which was Close Encounters at the time. And he and I would walk through airports and just, you know, you have a lot of time to kill because this was before the band flew private and sitting and killing time at LAX like everybody else and gave us something to talk about. And it gave us a common ground where, he knew a lot more about comic books than I did and he taught me a lot about film, probably more than most people would think I got from him.
And it's fascinating that Close Encounters was something that spoke to him because that, you know, music being a truly universal language is such a central theme to that film. It's fascinating that that story spoke to him in particular.
Yeah, and that was the big film that summer, and I just remember that was the time that we spent a lot of time traveling because my dad, I know this, now some of my inside stuff, my dad had just met his future wife, my future stepmom, and so he would sit with her, and so he would give me his first class ticket, so Jerry and I would sit together on the planes. So that's why, you know, he got to hang out with a 7-year-old. It wasn't his life special.
So over the years, various members of the Dead have had their own say in telling their perspective on the story. Your dad wrote a book, Phil wrote a book, Bob has his own solo film. What has their response to this movie been? Because it tells, you know, there's a lot of different perspectives at play.
I think the key here was where Final Cut did not lay with them.
Yeah.
Here, and it was an objective film, and they all signed on and trusted the filmmaking team. The reaction from the band, was very positive. Again, there's many ways you can tell the Grateful Dead story. His dad was especially supportive, but again, I think the key was this was the one that they had to trust someone else to tell their story and to tell it properly. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's very Grateful Dead. I wasn't at this meeting, but apparently Amir and Eric went to a meeting with my dad and Weir. And
he was on the phone from Hawaii, your dad.
Well, yeah, that's that sounds more like dad. So he was probably on the beach, pina colada, you know, watching the waves roll in. And they asked you guys, so what's your idea for the film? And you guys said, we don't know yet. We'll just make it up as we go along. And Weir goes, perfect. That's Grateful Dead.
And
so
he actually said, and surrounded by like lawyers and managers and all people that didn't want to hear this, we don't have six people mix our albums. We're not going to do that to you. Go do it. And like we looked around and we're like so excited, trying to contain ourselves, and that's how it started. Yeah.
So the plan was originally not for a 4-hour, 6-act epic going to Amazon,
correct? I mean, there's so many stories in this one. We were contracted to do a 90-minute film, and it's hard enough to do a contract with the Grateful Dead. They actually like, get them to sign a piece of paper. It's not really in their repertoire. So then we had to go back and change it. And open it up, and we had a trusting a financier, which was key because if we were locked into a studio at that point, I think they would have been nervous about everything. He was on board, the band became on board. It was a real battle, but it had worked out.
They told us it was going to be the Bill Kreutzmann story, so I don't know what.
Other people would have liked that. Not Billy, but there's other people that would like the story to have been about them.
Well, going off that, you know, the film covers a lot of ground, and not just the band, but different aspects of the entire Grateful Dead universe, whether that's, you know, the taping scene, or the wharf rats, or, you know, different aspects of the fandom, and the road crew. There's a lot in there, but you kind of had to draw the line somewhere, because time and space are finite. For both of you guys, what's something you wish could have had either more time in the spotlight, or just kind of more time to dwell on, you know, if the boundaries of space and time were limitless?
You're looking at me. You're looking at me.
I know something.
I just have one thing. I just wish we had referenced Vince Welnick personally. I felt that he was in the band for 5 years, and like most bands aren't together 5 years, and he was just such a sweet guy. So maybe it's just a personal thing, but that's something I wish we could have at least given him a, you know.
I think that's a great one, and I think mine's similar in that. And then towards the final cut, a little bit more got into it, but with Brent. And how important he was to the band and everybody and all that. And it crept in at the end, but Brent, I think. Yeah.
Now, let's talk about Hunter for a minute, because his involvement in the film is interesting. There's the one scene of him refusing to explain the lyrics of Dark Star in a very Hunter-ish way. But what was that process like of even getting some, you know, of Amir trying to get even some time with him and, you know, that being what you guys wound up getting, and what was I trying to kind of pin him down and get him to agree to take part in this?
You could not get that guy to shut up. We have hours and hours of Hunter just talk. None of it was no. Okay.
I think the great line, and neither of us even were on this shoot or had much to do with it, and it's kind of Amir being a guerrilla filmmaker at this point. But you hear him in the cut say, Bob Weir says to Amir, it's in the background of the car, and he says, "Well, you know he's coming." And Amir's like, "No." Bob's like, "What?" And they didn't know. And they kind of just, they knew where he was playing. They knew if they went with Bob, he would get a reception. And they kind of just walked into his dressing room. And then Amir got thrown out after. So we got the footage.
So let's talk about the use of the recurring Frankenstein motif that Amir employs throughout the film. Because I'm a big Abbott and Costello Made Frankenstein nerd myself, and I've known that Jerry was fond of the film, but you know, the decision to use that as kind of a tuning fork for so many of the points of the Grateful Dead history, the Frankenstein mythos, where did that idea come from?
Amir. Give him full credit.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. I wasn't there for that. So
Amir fought for that. A lot of people wanted to take it out. A lot of people didn't think it fit. It got way high up. Amir. And to me, I was always in Amir's corner. It's kind of the through line that makes it all kind of cohesively tell a story. So that's Amir. Amir's touch.
It's such an interesting through line to find there, because it's something organic that starts at Jerry's childhood, and you can carry it throughout, but it's something you wouldn't think of on first pass or second pass.
And there was like a middle time when we were going from 90 minutes to a longer form, where we didn't know if it could kind of contain the power that it contained in the beginning, you know what I'm saying, and kind of hold the story up and be parallel and be significant enough to stay, and it actually increased over time, and it became stronger. And so, I, like you said, I think without that, I can't even imagine it.
So, I guess for both of you guys, while working on this film, while pulling together different stories, different perspectives, what was something that surprised each of you? Like, something that was a big learning moment or a big aha moment? Not just in footage discovery, but just in different people's memories or perspectives on the story. What was something you each found revelatory?
Regarding the band?
The band or the culture around the band.
I kind of knew most of the story, so I think it's something really good that you're.
I was going to say something really good.
Regarding the film,
how hard it actually is, and how hard it was to pull off, and if we were starting again and saying it was going to be this hard in front of you, unless you really love the Dead, would you really go on that journey? The Barbara stuff, I guess, you know, that was kind of revelatory. I'd say that for sure.
So, do any folks in the crowd have a question or two for Justin and Eric? Yes, sir. How long did it take to bring the whole thing together? How long did the production process?
Different people say different times. I think for Amir, the director, it was 11 years since he kind of started it. 7 years for myself being on it, maybe now 8. 5 years of like real production, 3 years of editing, 2.5 years of editing, maybe something like that.
But
I don't know, it's a long time.
I wasn't married and I had no children when this film started, and now my wife and my 7 4-year-old children are around here somewhere. So
yeah, that's a good way to put
it. It took a while.
There are many births on this film.
So what?
Circle of Life.
So 11 or so years ago, what made you and Eric decide to, or you and Amir decide to embark on this journey together? That, because you were both longtime fans of the band. But
Amir came to me to give him credit again. It was something he's been trying to make and kind of bumping his head against the wall and running into walls and never really getting to the dead. And he came to me and said, could you help try to make this happen? And if you would, I want to do this together. And I said, oh my God, I can't, you know, wait to try. It's going to be impossible, but let's try. And then we got to Justin. That was the first meeting.
It's awesome. It's awesome. Anybody else with the... Yes, sir.
I have been asked that a lot. I don't know who those kids are. Apparently, I used to go out on stage when I was probably about their age, and my dad would glare very angrily at my mother, and so I got prevented from doing that. I'm guessing... I don't think they're Jerry's kids. They don't look like, they look too young to be Sunshine Kesey. So I'm guessing somebody's kids whose parents were on enough acid that they didn't notice they had just wandered out on stage. That would be my best guess.
Yes, sir.
Everybody has kids. It's, Bob has a couple kids. Phil has a couple kids. My dad has a couple kids. Jerry has 4 kids. What should we call it? Sunshine Kesey, he considers to be one of his daughters, so 5 kids. I'm looking at my wife to make sure I'm getting my math right, because this is one of those embarrassing moments where you can't remember everybody. Mickey has a couple kids.
Yeah.
Everybody's I'm looking at you like you were there. Yeah,
of course. I've read the books.
I
have a question as far as like footage and pulling together. You know, there's one show, particularly here for folks in Central Jersey, Monmouth County area, that's kind of considered a landmark, and that's English Town, 77. Is there any footage of English? Because I know the audio was released as a Dix Picks years ago. Is there any video footage of English Town in the archives?
Not that I'm aware of, because. Some people have told me that show's popular. I don't know. Apparently that show has a bit of a legend to it. I think we probably would have thought about using it, or you would probably be able to find it on YouTube, because you can just about find anything Grateful Dead if you look hard enough. So not to my knowledge.
Okay. And there is a ton of concert footage that we didn't use, because we didn't want to just make it a concert film. So like you said, if you go to YouTube, there's tons of stuff out there that we didn't use.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think I saw someone else's hand on this side. Yes.
I asked just to follow up on the lack of Vince. Like, why was that? I was really surprised by that, that there wasn't at least a mention. It was just
ran out of time. It's a good question. Running out of time. Running out of time, sorry. Thought it was a small enough room. Running out of time, nothing personal whatsoever. Just the Hornsby stuff should have been, could have been in there. Branford playing with them at the end, like you were saying, could have kept going till today. At some point, you just had to take the film out of people's hands because it was getting that long. But Justin made a good point. That is a missing element.
So, Justin, as someone who, you grew up in this community, in this family, obviously you pursued a slightly different art in film as opposed to music, but what was, one or two of the key lessons you learned from being around the Grateful Dead that you think you can apply to film and to how you approach the way you cut a film, shoot a film, conceive a film?
Oh, well, I thought you were going in a different direction. I was going to say, first of all, never drink anything if it's opened.
That's also fair.
The first main lesson that I learned from Grateful Dead. But in terms of creativity and filmmaking, it was all about freedom. And it was all about, it's not about winning awards or selling records. It's about being true to yourself and doing stuff because you have to turn yourself on, to use a Grateful Dead expression, first. And if you can follow your own dream and make it real to yourself, and if 10 people love it, great. And if 10 million people love it, even better. But just be true to yourself and don't follow trends. And like I said, I have this famous story about I used to watch MTV with Jerry when we were doing In the Dark. And this was like late 80s MTV, so there was a lot of spandex going on, and I was like, and I was really curious, because I thought he'd have some really real Jerry insight into like seeing into this heavy metal music, which was really popular at the time. And I looked over at him and I'm like, what do you think? I don't even remember the band. I'm like, what do you think of this guy playing guitar? And he thought, and he did one of those Jerry beard scratches, and he's like, it's just so mindless. And I was like, oh, okay, so it's just like the rest of us. So.
One thing I would say is a note that I saw on that they didn't do when they were young is establishing shots. And they should always get your establishing shot, because in the Mary Prankster's movie that was put out, if they only had establishing shots and you knew where they were for that, it would have been unreal.
That's interesting. Yeah, they didn't do establishing shots.
You have no idea what's going on. It's just rambling. It's amazing conversational stuff, but it just goes on for hours as opposed to, you know, they're jumping from place to place, but they even admitted they should have done that.
Huh, it's fascinating. It's like the old silent Passion of Joan of Arc told entirely in close-up, but no medium shots, no establishing shots. Just,
I feel like we just gave you two answers that had nothing to do with your questions. What's
that's that? Fine. That's fine. Right. So, Justin, also congratulations on the other film you had playing this weekend, Break On Through, a celebration of Rayman's Era.
Thank you.
That won a big award from the festival this morning.
Yeah, so I take all that back. It's actually about winning awards and selling as many albums as you possibly can. That's really why we're all in this business.
Absolutely, absolutely. No, but I was in the room yesterday morning when that film had its world premiere, and the atmosphere in here was just electric. So, again, congratulations
on
that.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Good question. Hopefully enough people saw it here that they tell two friends and they tell two friends, and somebody wants to release it somewhere. We literally just finished it like 10 minutes before the screening, so.
And one of the feature performers in that Doris film is actually playing down the road in a couple of hours, Warren Haynes of Government Mule.
Yeah.
If I don't mean to sidetrack away from a Long Strange Trip, but tell me a bit about collaborating with Warren and capturing his incredible version of When the Music's Over in that film.
Well, I've known Warren for years and years and years, and he's just such a sweet guy and a consummate musician. I had nothing to do with him being a part of the show. It came together real quick. But he's somebody you can put on any type of music and he'll make it sound cool. So having Warren play Doris stuff was perfect.
Absolutely. Have any more questions about Long Strange Trip from the crowd? Yes, sir, at the back.
Yeah. Are you guys planning to release it on DVD?
It is going to come, yes. For the holidays. Christmas time, yes.
We are?
Yes.
Awesome.
How about some of the other... every year you guys release something in the theaters for the Deadheads meet together. You guys release those?
Well, that's a different arm of the Dead operation.
That's a Rhino thing. I don't believe they released those that stuff, because I know we had a View from the Vault series for a while, and I don't think I think those are supposed to be special kind of one-offs. But I don't work for Rhino, so I could be totally making this up.
Yeah, I don't think the Dead meetup at the movie stuff ever comes out on physical media. I think that's just like the one night only.
Well, they showed the Grateful Dead movie once, and that's obviously
But like like there was a Beat Club Europe 72. I don't think they ever did a physical release of that.
It's such a little pricey.
Yeah. Which, you know, brings me to Europe 72, which is one of, you know, a lot of people's favorite eras of the band. It gets a lot of time in the film, particularly that morning dew from the Lyceum. What do you think it is about Europe 72 that is such a lightning in a bottle moment in the history of the Dead?
Boy, I think it's the same to be said for 77. Don't they seem to just hit sparks in certain areas where it takes off and just becomes magic? And I don't know. I think Europe 72 is one of those magic moments.
Really
I was
young.
Two, so I don't really, you know.
I said, I was just saying they're really young.
Absolutely.
Young and fresh and out on the road for the first time and, you know, creative and brought good stuff with them. And
well, I will say from that tour, because my dad had been playing with Mickey for so many years, and it was just after Mickey had left the band, he made a very strong effort to be as sober as possible on the Europe 72 tour, because he wanted stuff to be somewhat in time. So I know there was a certain effort made to kind of play your best and really shine, as he was the only drummer. So I know from his part, you know, it wasn't just luck.
It's such a special period, that sound, because it's the rare one drummer era, and then also you have both Pig and Keith in the band at the same time, which leads to a really kind of rich layering of textures, which is, that's, it,
it's a really special period. That's the only time the band transitioned. It wasn't just a hard, oh my god, somebody died, no, somebody new kind of period.
Absolutely. Was there any other questions in the crowd? I think there was one over here.
Yeah.
Okay. So the physical release, Eric, you said, is planned for around the holidays. Is there going to be any potential like bonus features or like extended
it's
sequences?
It's all in the works. When I say it, I know the distributor wants to do it, so I think it's happening. So I just don't know the details.
Okay. Cool. So I think that about does it for us. Eric Eisner, Justin Kreutzmann, congratulations once again on Long Strange Trip. 2 years ago, you promised you were going to bring it back to the Asbury Park Music and Film Festival, and now it is here.
Did it.
And we were all in the room to experience it. So, gentlemen, thank you. Enjoy the rest of the festival, folks.
And thank you guys all for coming and watching. Appreciate it.
Thank you.